Live from East Hampton's library for the second annual Hampton's Whodunit Festival. It takes place through this Sunday throughout East Hampton Village. Events include interactive CSI challenges, escape rooms, graveyard tours, talks with mystery and true crime authors, and I've got one of the best in just a moment, Brad Thor, we're going to talk with. For a rundown of the entire schedule, it's simple. Just go to HamptonsWhoDoneIt.org. HamptonsWhoDoneIt.org. And it is my pleasure to sitting across the table from me, author Brad Thaw. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, Brian. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Brad is a number one New York Times best-selling author. Now, Brad, I wasn't exactly sure on the number of books, so I said over 20 thrillers. But how many books?
I do. I have 23 out. My 24th is coming this July 23rd, and that one's called Shadow of Doubt.
Okay. Some of the other titles that Brad has written are include The First Commandment, The Last Patriot, and the one we're going to talk about is called Dead Fall. That's your most recent,
last summer, yeah.
Okay. So can you give us an overview? What's the plot of Dead Fall?
So the plot of Dead Fall is an American aid worker goes missing in Ukraine, and because the United States can't put boots on the ground in the war zone, they take their top spy and drop him in Ukraine and say, find her and bring everyone who harmed her to justice.
Holy smokes. This is very timely.
Yeah, very timely.
Absolutely. So what inspired you? I mean, you kind of answered the question by saying how timely this is. I was going to ask you what inspired you to write this.
But that's a great question. I grew up, so I love thrillers. Stephen King had once said that you should write what you love to read because that's where your passion is. And okay. So as a boy, we had a place, they called it the Hamptons of the Midwest where I grew up, Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. We had a home.
They actually call it the Hamptons?
Yeah, they call it the Hamptons of the Midwest, Lake Geneva.
I'm sorry.
No, it's a fantastic little village is there. The real estate is sky high. But I used to steal my parents' books. Ludlum, Clancy, Morell's books. I mean, Trevanian books. And I loved Alistair MacLean. And I loved Where Eagles Dare, which was a great movie with Clint Eastwood and Richard Burton.
Yes.
I was a big fan also recently of Band of Brothers and Saving Private Ryan. I wanted to do a modern World War II style book. And so the war in Ukraine gave me that ability to have this land war in Europe, to take my great America's top spy, Scott Harvath, drop him into that war and have him have to find this American and get her out if she's still alive. And so that's what inspired me to do the book.
Gotcha. And the book, again, is called Dead Fall. This is Brad Thor we're talking with. Now, this I find fascinating. You were recruited by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, along with some other writers, to take part. Was this to, of course, I'm not going to ask you what you talked about. Obviously, that's not what I'm getting
it's
at.
It's the Las Vegas of government programs. What happens in the red cell stays in the red cell.
There it is.
But we can talk around it, Brian.
Thank you, Brad. Yeah. You're a good interviewee. I appreciate it. So it was called Red Cell was the operation.
The analytic Red Cell unit, and it was created in the wake of 9/11 because even before the 9/11 commission got together, they realized that Al-Qaeda had been successful because of a lack of imagination on our part. And so our federal government, this is the most forward-thinking program I've ever seen in my life come out of D.C., they said, we are going to invite creative thinkers from outside the Beltway into D.C. to help us think 3, 4, 5 steps ahead of the bad guys.
Wow.
So it was people like me, Michael Bay, the director of Transformer movies. We were brought in to help them dream up scenarios because with most nations, they often fight the next war by looking in the rearview mirror, and they think things are going to look like they have in the past. And so our job was to help them see what things were going to look like over the horizon, and that's what we did.
Wow, it's a privilege, right?
I'm the son of a United States Marine, so to be asked to serve my country, not by picking up a rifle, but by using the gray matter between my ears, it's the greatest honor of my life.
Your dad was a Marine.
He's still, once a Marine, always a Marine. He's no longer active, but well, yes.
Yeah, my dad went to West Point, so yeah. Yeah,
there you go.
I know exactly what you're talking about. So the experience was just tremendous for you.
It was fantastic. You're dreaming up things. I'm doing stuff that I normally do for my novels. And in fact, one of the scenarios that I came up with actually happened somewhere in the world. And I said, it's all over the news. Can I go on TV and talk about this? They said, nope, we don't talk about it. The one thing they did talk about, Brian, to give people an idea of what they did, is they war-gamed how terrorists might take advantage of an approaching hurricane. where we take equipment and move it out of the path and put it in a marshalling yard, or how we put people into hurricane shelters. How might Al-Qaeda or other ne'er-do-wells take advantage of that? That's the one thing that I am allowed to say publicly that the Red Cell looked at.
Right, a natural disaster.
Yep, and how might they inflict even more damage?
Holy smokes, just trying to wrap my head around that thought, much less you guys are coming up with other scenarios that could or possibly did happen. It's just extraordinary, and thanks for your service. I mean, I think that's – and I was going to ask you about – your stuff is fiction.
Correct.
Right, but you – are true to all the intricacies of spy and military and technology. So the research you do, I know you travel around the world. Could you tell us about that?
So I call what I do faction, where you don't know where the facts end and the fiction begins.
Right.
And in fact, one of the greatest compliments I get paid is people say, I love to read your books with my laptop open because I think this can't be real. And then I Google it and there it is. It is real. Right. So I spend a lot of time with men and women in the intelligence community, special operations community, law enforcement, the diplomatic corps, because I want to have that. I want to have my books ring very, very true.
Sure.
And you don't want people who know this realm to kind of be thrown off. I have presidents, former presidents that read my books, heads of state in different places around the world, and I want them to have a great, great experience, but not bump on mistakes that I make. So I'm a perfectionist, so I take my craft seriously, getting those things right.
I was, you know, while you were saying that, Brad, I was thinking you must walk a very fine line because you can't get too deep into the weeds because a regular person like me who's going through your book might get kind of overthrown by it. But at the same time, like you said, you've got former presidents, you've got all types of people in government reading your work that want to make sure you know what you're talking about at the same time. So you thread a fine needle there.
I do. And what's really funny is you spend enough time with these people and I let them see the manuscript before I publish. And I've had people say, Brad, we told you point A, we told you point C, B that's in your book now has to come out. I'm like, but I invented that. They said it's too close to the real thing. And Brian, I don't want to poison the well and lose my experts, so I change it.
Right. So you have experts to run by besides your editor, who I guess gives you, is it readable?
Right.
But then you have to go through experts as well.
Absolutely.
And there must be quite a few of those from time to time, right? Depending on the subject matter.
Yeah, and it's like any other business. You want to have a good network. You want to be a good networker. I buy a lot of pitchers of beer, a lot of steak dinners, and these men and women share great stories and details with me.
But at the same time, before you were asked to be privileged to take part of Red Cell for the U.S. Department of Homeland Security to help figure out what might happen terrorist-wise, which is such a great thing, were you connected with folks in the know in the government? Did you go and get some of your research from them?
I did. I had a handful of people that I could go to and speak with. And it's like anything else. It is networking. You go to a party and you got to move around the party. You can't stand in the corner and just talk to the one banker. You want to talk to the people in different sectors and all that kind of stuff. So it is I'm lucky I've got that kind of personality where I can move amongst people and get to know them and get them to trust me and tell me their stories.
Right. I just want to remind folks that we're talking to Brad Thor. His latest book is entitled Dead Fall, the 23rd will be out later this year.
So it's the 23rd in my Scott Harvath series. Okay. I tell people it's like the James Bond movies. You don't need to see them in order. You can go out and read the latest Brad Thor book and my next Brad Thor book. They're all Brad Thor books. My next Scott Harvath as protagonist, that's called Shadow of Doubt. It comes out July 23rd. But Deadfall is in stores now.
Gotcha. So I was thinking as you go through the writing process, as this comes to you, as these stories come to you, and then you're hit with like, now I'm getting technical. Now I got to deal with some aspect because I want to incorporate it into the story. I don't know about it. And that's where you start to put your radar out. You put feelers out for people in the know in that field of that technology or whatever it might be.
Absolutely. And I'll have readers offer too. I'll have people who have read my books for years. And I have people that approach me at festivals like this one online and say, hey, if you ever decide you're going to write about this, I served over there. I was on that base for 15 years, or I helped DARPA invent this piece of equipment. And if you ever want to include it in a book, call me.
Gotcha.
So I'm very lucky.
Oh, absolutely. So what is the, it sounds like with 23 books, you know, that you don't have, you're not searching for topics. It sounds like you're, I mean, do you have a lot in the hopper that you're just waiting to get to? Like, I mean, you've got subjects that you're very fertile when it comes to the writing process.
I do, but I take a lot of inspiration from what's happening in the world right now. So
obviously with this one being about Ukraine.
Right, exactly.
You like to be timely.
I do like to be timely, but I also want the books to be evergreen. If you are on the Jersey Shore 5 years from now and you find Deadfall in your VRBO, I want you to have a fabulous read. So that's the trick for me, is how do I make stuff timely, but so that it never passes out of fashion. That's the tightrope, the balancing act.
And do you have are you a disciplined writer, would you say? Do you, you know, go into, now you say you live in Nashville for the last 10 years.
Moved from Chicago, right.
Moved from Chicago. Is that where you're from originally, Chicago?
Yep. My mom was a flight attendant for TWA. She flew New York, Paris, Paris, New York, met my dad, and they had the set up shop in Chicago, and that's where I've been until I moved to Nashville.
So, which was 10 years ago.
Yep.
So are you a disciplined writer?
Well, you know, Jack London said you can't wait for inspiration. You have to go after it with a stick.
Right.
And that's definitely with me. It's seat of pants, a seat of chair. If the tap isn't open, the water doesn't flow. So you just have to be disciplined.
That's what I figured.
It doesn't happen.
You got to go. And you
It's hard. It's
right.
hard. Sometimes book a year. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
if it wasn't for Jack Daniels, I'd be out of business. There are some days. Listen, I felt bad about that until I saw that Google has a whiskey room for their coders. And when their coders get blocked, they go and have a whiskey.
Is that why you moved to Tennessee?
Well, maybe. Maybe.
So
I'm going to plead the fifth.
Well, it's such a pleasure, Brad Thaw, to talk to you. And congratulations.
Thanks, Brian.
The latest book is Dead Fall. And I wanted to ask you, I find it fascinating, the writing process. When you hit a wall, is there something you do? Do you go for a walk? Do you just say, all right, I'm done for today? Do you go for a run?
Motion is big. So I'm a big fitness guy. So I work out a lot. But my best ideas come to me when I'm relaxed. So I always tell people, where do you get your ideas? I say, in the shower or after the second glass of wine. That's where they come from.
And are you, when you're writing a book, is it like constant? Do you have to, if you're out with dinner with friends, you go, I got to go record this little bit that crossed my mind.
I do.
Jot something down on napkins.
I have the notes function on the phone I'm holding up right now on my iPhone, and I will dictate in there because I'm 54, and I don't trust myself to remember the next morning.
I gotcha.
So
you're all consumed. While you're in the middle of writing a book, you're all consumed
by it. It's constantly going. You think you're turning it off when you leave the office for the day. I'll wake up in the middle of the night. Yep. I've got hotel notepads everywhere, in the pockets of my robes, in the kitchen, all that stuff.
Brad, it's a real pleasure talking to you.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Congratulations on the new book. It's Brad Thaw, and the book is called Dead Fall. It's a pleasure.
Me too. Thanks.
Absolutely. Diane, you're going to join us.
I am.
All right.
Thank you, Brad. It's been great to listen to
you. Am I free to leave, officer?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
You're going to switch seats with Abby Endler, who is the fiction director for the Hamptons Whodunit Festival. Thank you. And with us now, I'm Diane Michelli, General Manager of WLIW-FM, joining Brian Cosgrove here at the Hamptons Whodunit Festival in East Hampton. We're at the East Hampton Library. And joining us now to talk about the festival is the fiction director for Hamptons Whodunit.
No, big job, Brad.
Nice title.
Abby Endler. But she also is so many other things. You like people in public media. You have a million jobs. So Abby also is the creator of Crime by the Book, a crime fiction Instagram account, the host of Criminal Types Crime Fiction Podcast, curator of Crime by the Box, a monthly book subscription service, and her day job is marketing at Knopf, a division of Penguin Random House. And you live in Texas, but you're in the Hamptons.
Oh, my goodness.
I am. I know. Do you think I have enough jobs or what?
I don't know. So where should we start? First, let's start with the festival. Tell us, what's your job? How do you choose who to bring to the festival?
Oh, gosh. It's such a pleasure. I'm so excited to be part of this organization. It's a wonderful group of people. And yeah, I got the very lucky quote-unquote job, but really it's just such a privilege of curating our fiction program here. So I work with the wonderful team at Hamptons Whodunit. We basically brainstorm. A lot of it starts with looking at, you know, who are authors, of course, with new books coming out, who's writing exciting new stuff in the crime fiction world. And we put our heads together and kind of come up with a dream wish list. And then I get to start pitching folks, which is wonderful. Wonderful. We try to have, you know, a great diversity of perspectives here at the festival. We want to hit different subgenres within crime fiction. It's been a ton of fun.
Is this the only crime fiction festival in the country?
No, it's not. Actually, really? There are a few others. There are a couple. There's one called Thriller Fest that happens in Manhattan every summer. Mm-hmm. There's one called VoucherCon that travels around the country. Mm-hmm. But we really wanted to make this kind of an intimate festival. Those are a bit more industry focused. And we wanted this to be intimate and a place where readers can come and really mingle and spend time with their favorite authors.
Well, it seems like you're doing just that. It's the second annual festival. Mm-hmm. People are thrilled to be here. It's very exciting. The library is just bustling. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. But you like really are into crime.
You might say I spend a lot of time thinking about crime.
Why? How did that happen?
Gosh, you know, I've always been a crime fiction reader ever since I was a little kid. And I think, you know, when I got out of school, I had freedom to read what I wanted to again, you know. And for me, that really has always been crime fiction. So I sort of dove in headfirst, started my Instagram account, and everything kind of developed naturally from there. That was how I got into book publishing. And yeah, the rest has kind of followed.
Do you have a favorite book?
Oh my gosh, that's so hard. I do. I have a couple, but I could pick one if you want.
Sure.
All right. I would say favorite book is probably a book called Final Girls by Riley Sager. If anyone out there loves thrillers,
Final Girls.
If there are any horror fans listening, they might recognize that term. It's an homage to the leading ladies of slasher films. It's fantastic.
Wow. That's amazing. And what's your other?
Oh, other favorite would be a book called The Snowman by Joe Nesbø. It's very different. It's a kind of serial killer story about a detective in Oslo, Norway, hunting down a very twisted killer.
Oh, my goodness.
I know.
That sounds gory.
That's why I'm a lovely person, even though I spend all my time thinking about this stuff.
That's amazing. So just tell us about your Instagram account. You have about over 100,000 subscribers. Yeah. That's pretty big.
Yeah, it's wild.
What do you put on your Instagram account? What would we see?
Gosh, if you followed me, you would see a lot of book recommendations. Okay. I do Instagram Live author interviews. I kind of curate a lot of different recommended reading lists. Mm-hmm. So, for example, a list of my favorite books with great plot twists, that kind of thing. But yeah, I started Crime by the Book. It's so fun. I started it almost a decade ago now, and it's really grown organically. Yeah.
Wow, Instagram that long ago. Who knew?
I think it was kind of at the early stage of it.
You're a pioneer.
It's blown my mind that over 100,000 people actually want to get crime book recommendations.
Well,
you know?
There you go. And tell us some of the authors that you have been able to bring to the festival this year.
Oh, we have such an amazing lineup this year. Maybe I'll tell you a bit about our guests of honor.
Sure.
We have Ruth Ware, who is an incredible kind of modern Agatha Christie style writer.
I had the pleasure to talk to her. We're going to run that interview right after you.
Well, fantastic. Yes. She's wonderful. One of my favorites. They all are, really. We have S.A. Cosby, who writes fantastic Southern noir. His books are totally gripping and visceral. We have Brad Thor, who you were just speaking with here, of course, an icon of contemporary thrillers.
Icon,
I would dare say. I think that's fair.
That's fair.
It's pretty big.
I like it.
And then we also have Ashley Flowers, who is known as the host of Crime Junkie, of course. Fantastic true crime podcast. And she had her debut thriller come out recently as well.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah.
Crime junkies. Boy, this is some genre. Huh?
I know. Listen, it is.
Is it one of the biggest genres in literature?
You know, I don't have any stats, but I would say anecdotally, I would have to say
it's got to be up there, right?
I think so, especially because one of the things I love about the genre is just how much it encompasses. You know, if you look at our fiction lineup here at Hampton's Whodunit, we have authors all the way from Iceland. We have people who are writing political thrillers, people who write, you know, creepy suspense stories. And we've all kind of runs the gamut. And I love that about the crime
genre. And also
genre.
The true crime experts, which I find really fascinating. And Brian interviewed Barbara Butcher, which we're also going to bring to our listeners here in this hour. Just fascinating.
Absolutely. No, and I love that we can bring it all together and kind of celebrate all of it and learn about all of it this weekend.
So as someone who works in marketing at a publishing house, do you connect authors with true crime experts to help them, or even in your own work in marketing books?
That's such an interesting... I actually do not do that. So typically, the way my job works, when I get a book, it's kind of already in its finished stages. Mm-hmm. So an editor might be someone who would help an author if they're looking to have kind of a consult or to do research like that. My job is really helping to spread the word about books, which kind of, it turns out, is almost my whole entire life now, my actual job, and then the other things I'm doing on the side too.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Where in Texas do you live?
I live in Houston.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'm a Connecticut girl who was in New York for almost a decade and then moved to Texas this past summer.
Oh, really? This past summer?
Yeah.
Why?
Well,
why did you move to Texas? I'm curious.
No, I went to college there. I went to Rice University in Houston, and I have a wonderful community of friends. And also, Houston is very underrated. It has amazing bookstores. So for someone like me who's so involved in the crime fiction world, there's actually a bookstore down there called Murder by the Book that does only crime fiction.
Wow.
Yes.
So you're just amazing. I love it.
I have an event series with them, and that's where my Crime by the Box book subscription service, it's in partnership with them, which is great.
And you can deal with that heat.
Well, you know, I've had to learn. Yeah, I moved out during the summer, which is a bold choice, I think.
I'll
it was
say.
Kind of trial by almost literal fire.
Yeah. And because we've hit a good, almost all of Connecticut on our broadcast. Oh, what part of Connecticut do you?
From Farmington.
Okay,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, so
absolutely. Farmington's in our range.
Really? Amazing. Yeah. Well, born and raised there. I went to Ethel Walker for middle school and high school. For Connecticut folks, they'll know
there
the school.
There we go.
A shout out to Farmington.
Yeah, WLIWFM. We hit Southern Connecticut. And of
amazing.
Course, we stream. So anybody can listen to us
anywhere. I wonder if my parents are listening. Oh my gosh.
I hope so. Anywhere, anytime. WLIW.org/radio.
Amazing. Livestream.
Yeah. So what's in store for the rest of the festival?
Oh, gosh. Well, this afternoon, I'm interviewing Ruth Ware, which is going to be so much fun. I'm really looking forward to that.
I did already. I can give you.
You can attest.
She's so nice.
She's so awesome. And then, this evening, it's going to be so fun. We're doing a trivia night, kind of like a pub quiz
fun.
Style. I'm over at Hedges Inn, which is going to be awesome.
Fun.
We have Alifair Burke, who's one of our honorary co-chairs for the festival, and also a fantastic crime writer in her own right. She and I are kind of co-moderating a trivia quiz all about all things crime fiction, true crime, movies, TV shows. It's going to be a ton of fun.
That sounds like
so you're moderating as well as organizing, as well as publishing, as well as Instagramming, as well as podcasting.
Yeah, I'm exhausted.
I'm tired.
You'll see at the end of this table, I have a very large coffee, which explains a lot about what's happening right now. But yeah, I have the privilege of moderating, I think, 7 panels over the course of
my
festival.
That's a lot of coffee.
Wow. It's a lot of coffee.
That's a lot of coffee. Wow. I want to just, I think it would hamptonswhodunit.org would be the place to go for folks listening, right?
Absolutely. Hamptonswhodunit.org. You can find us on Instagram too, at hamptonswhodunit.
It's got the schedule and there's a ton of fun stuff to do through Sunday throughout the village of East Hampton.
And thank you, Abby Endler, so much. You have so many things to your...
Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you. No, thank you so much. It was wonderful chatting with both of you.
Thank you so much for being here with us and for all that you're doing for the festival here in East Hampton and for true crime lovers anywhere and everywhere.
It's absolutely my pleasure. And thank you both for being here and for covering the festival.
It's our pleasure. Thank
Great.
You.
What a pleasure. So are we going to go to...
Yes.
We're going to go to the Ruth Ware?
I think we should.
Interview? Do we have that queued up and ready to go? Yeah. So I had the pleasure to talk to Ruth Ware just about a half hour ago. So let's listen to that. Ruth Ware is the author of several books, which have sold over 6 million copies, has appeared on bestseller lists around the world, including the Sunday Times and the New York Times. Her most recent book is 0 Days, and I want to welcome Ruth Ware. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
It's a pleasure. Now, you live in England.
I do.
Right. So you came over, you mentioned it's your publishing company's 100th anniversary, which is a big deal. And then you're here for the Whodunit Festival.
Absolutely.
And then you'll go back.
I'm flying back this weekend, sadly. So
okay. That's quite a trip.
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind little visit, but I've had a great time. I've never been to East Hampton before. It's stunning. I feel like I could just, you know, come here on holiday for the rest of my life. But
So what can you give us kind of an overview? The new book is called 0 Days from Ruth Ware. And can you give us an overview of the plot?
I sure can. So my main character, Jack, is a pen tester, which is something I've had to get used to defining. A pen tester is someone who breaks into buildings or secure systems for a living to kind of test their security, report back, you know, this held up, this didn't. Hmm. And she's out on a ordinary job testing the security of a finance company, comes home middle of the night, discovers her husband, who's also her business partner, has been murdered. Yep. His throat slit, he's lying in a pool of his own blood, all of which is bad enough, but she soon realizes that she is the number one suspect for his murder, and she has the choice of hanging around and hoping that the police realize their mistake or going on the run, using her considerable professional skills to try and figure out what really happened.
I like it. So does she tests, as you said, security systems for companies to see if is this also computer stuff that she does? They want to test if their systems can get hacked.
Yeah. So there's two types of pen testing: digital pen testing and physical pen testing.
Okay.
Digital is exactly that. It's websites, it's secure databases. Physical pen testing is buildings. And so Jack's setup is she does the physical side, her husband Gabe does the digital side.
Okay. And he's the one who
has sadly stumbled over something he shouldn't in the course of his research and has paid the price.
So I guess you had to get in the weeds somewhat. Are you a technical person to make sure you had the right
terminology and so forth about computers and hacking and so forth?
It's funny. I'm really not a tech person at all.
So you had to learn.
But I'd written two books that were kind of tech adjacent. I'd written one about a sort of scary smart house that was kind of ruled over by an app, and one about an app company who went on a corporate retreat where everything goes horribly wrong. So I'd been listening to a lot of, you know, podcasts about startups, reading lots of books about tech companies, trying to sort of get into the heads of tech entrepreneurs. And over lockdown, I found myself, I'd finished these books, by the way, but you know, you never lose the interest in a subject.
Oh, good.
So over lockdown, I found myself kind of still in that headspace, but going a bit darker and a bit more crimey. And I started to listen to all these podcasts about kind of tech scams and cons and, you know, security and hackers, and pen testers was part of this whole world that I had known nothing about. Mm-hmm. But I was really fascinated by the idea that basically pen testers are ethical hackers or ethical burglars.
Right. You legitimate.
Know, exactly. They're legitimate. People with a really specific set of skills, right, who learn everything they need to know to break into your house, to ruin your life, to disrupt your digital existence. But at the 11th hour, they go all that way. They learn all of those skills, but in the end, they choose not to personally profit from those. They choose to use those skills for good, to try, right, and make the world a safer place.
Gotcha.
And I was just really interested in the kind of person who would go that far in a career of sort of criminal intent, but turn away at the last minute. I thought, what an interesting person you would have to be.
Yeah, that does sound interesting. You're right, because they could use their powers, as you say, for evil and get monetary gain.
Absolutely,
in a,
yeah,
very easy way, but they're doing it for the,
yeah,
right reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is, yeah. So we're talking with Ruth Ware, part of the Hamptons Whodunit Festival, which is going on. Her new book is called 0 Days. You know, I was talking to you before we started, before we went on the air, and I said, I went on your website, and I was thinking about, you've written several books, and about the writing process. And it answered part of my question, because you said your desk faces a blank wall, which I thought was, that's exactly what the kind of question was going on in my head. How does she do it? So you said, are you very disciplined? Do you go in every day and say, okay, I'm going to write today? And then you know, you don't have anything in front of you because you want your imagination and your writing to take over?
I would say I'm moderately disciplined. So for, okay, a long time, I wrote alongside the day job. I had to kind of squeeze my writing into the evenings and the weekends. And when I was lucky enough to be able to give up my job and write full time,
right,
I promised myself that I would take this as a career. You know, I treat it as a job because it now was my job. So part of that is I only keep my work in progress on my main desktop computer. So I have to physically be in my office to write. I don't have it on a laptop. And I hope that there's a kind of Pavlovian thing of, I walk through my office door and my brain clicks into gear and goes, right, it's time to write.
Right.
Obviously, writers are, by and large, amazing procrastinators.
I would think so.
There's always a reason to, you know, check social media or kind
any
of go online. Exactly.
Right.
Research something, quote unquote.
And you have kids too.
I have
so
two kids.
So you can listen. We, yeah, want to go check on the,
yeah,
kids, right?
Yeah. Well, they're at school now. So, okay, my routine is pretty much they head off to school. I go into my office, shut the door, hopefully do some writing, sometimes, right, not. But yeah, I try to be like kind of office hours. And then at the end of the day, when my kids come home from school, I switch off the computer and I try to be a family person.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And I like the idea of just the blank wall, almost like a screen for your imagination.
Absolutely.
Right? If you look at it.
Yeah, right? I do have a window, but it overlooks just trees. Like literally all you can see is just trees.
Which you love, which
I love.
Most people do,
yeah,
love trees.
Exactly.
But you mentioned that. If you need a break from the blank wall, you look to the trees. So I do want to back up here a second and say that you've always wanted to be a writer. This is a dream come true for you, which I love. And the fact is that you've been writing since you were just a kid and were afraid to show people, and you'd keep it under your bed. But you were a waitress for a while. You also worked in the publishing industry, in the book business for a while. So you got to learn a little bit about how that works. And then finally, some of your stuff you were brave enough to show. And
here we are.
Exactly. Here you are in East Hampton.
Very grateful to be here.
Right. Here you are at the Whodunit Festival. Yeah. So who are some of your, I think Agatha Christie was written as one of your
Yeah, Agatha Christie is. I mean, you know, I think anybody who writes in the crime and thriller genre owes a huge debt to Christie, particularly in terms of her plotting and so on. You know, so much of what we take for granted about the crime genre is stuff that she originated. You know, Marple and Poirot and Hastings, you know, that she invented so many of the tropes of the genre. But, you know, gosh, there's so many writers that I love. Daphne du Maurier is a heroine of mine. Nancy Mitford, she's so funny. So many contemporary writers, you know, people like Erin Kelly, Claire McIntosh, Megan Miranda, Riley Sager, you know, just, it's a really exciting time to be writing crime. There's so many good writers.
Great. And did you abide by that old rule that, you know, the good ones borrow and the great ones steal?
I mean, I definitely have done my fair share of both borrowing and stealing in my work. My book, The Turn of the Key, is very heavily based on The Turn of the Screw. Something which I'm very happy to come clean about. I think the question is whether you're ashamed of your borrowings or not, and by and large I'm not, so.
Well, good. We're talking with Ruth Ware. Her latest book is called 0 Days. So you enjoy traveling. I saw that you enjoy going out, meeting the folks who read your book. So you don't have a problem with coming all the way over here, flying over the Atlantic.
No, well, it's a lovely thing to be able to do. I guess the strange thing about being a writer is that you're kind of shut into your office for sort of, you know, 9 to 10 months a year, listening to the voices in your head and trying to kind of, you know, commune with these imaginary people. Right. And then once a year, you're sort of pushed out into the bright lights, sort of, you know, slightly blinking and confused, and try to explain what it is you've been doing all of this time. So I don't think, you know, I wouldn't want to travel all the year round, but I think it's the perfect balance of
right. So even prior to the pandemic, you kind of lived a pandemic kind of life, because you would hunker down with the family with your writing, and then it's time to go out and push the book, or time to do your publicity tour, right?
So well, the ironic thing is that out of everybody I know, the pandemic for me, I actually had much less time to myself, because suddenly all of my family were in the house. Normally they're not, so my sort of hermit existence was kind of gone the other way. I was like, why am I surrounded by all these people? How am I supposed to find time to write?
I would like to direct folks to Ruth's website, which is as simple as ruthware.com.
Not very imaginative.
Well, it's but nice and simple, and that's the way we like it in the media business, right? So the latest book is 0 Days, which you were kind enough to share with us what the plot is, and it sounds very intriguing. You have a book, or is it already done, The One Perfect Couple?
It's pretty much signed, sealed, and delivered. Yeah, it's coming this May.
Wow.
Yeah.
So right on the heels of 0 Days, we've got One Perfect Couple.
Yep.
All right, so we look forward to that. Ruth, it's been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Ruth Ware.
This is WLIW-FM. We are live at the Hamptons Whodunit Festival at the East Hampton Library. I'm Diane Michelli, General Manager, joined by host Brian Cosgrove and East Hampton Library Executive Director Dennis Fabisak. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Good to see you, Dennis.
You too.
So tell us about this festival. It's the second year. What is it all about, and how is it been at the library?
That's right.
Well, you know, the library is all about doing things with the community, and the village decided to put on this event. They consulted us ahead of time, and they wanted to keep it far enough away from Authors Night that it wouldn't conflict, and we're thrilled that they did that. Mystery and true crime is really, really popular. If you watch Netflix, almost every other show they have is in that genre.
Yeah.
And we really embraced it. You know, it's free programming at the library. It's bringing a whole bunch of book lovers and authors into the building and seeing what we have here. And it's something we hope they will continue to do year after year, and we will always support it. And love the fact that it's here as one of the events we can put on.
I was going to say, it's a very impressive schedule, and folks can go to hamptonswhodunit.org. It's just that simple, that all the information is right there, hamptonswhodunit.org.
And you have many authors who are here speaking in conversation, but you also have things like an escape room in the library.
Yeah, the library has put on escape rooms in the past as library programs. Last year, for the first Hamptons Whodunit, we decided to offer some. It was a big hit, so this year the staff have upped it, and we've put a lot more money into it and time. And I think the 200 plus people that have signed up for it are going to be really, really happy when they attend them.
That's very, very exciting. I'm not going into the escape room. I'm too scared. I don't think I could ever find my way out, but I know that people love them.
Yeah, and they have interactive CSI challenges.
Yeah,
there's lunches with forensic experts.
Yeah,
that's an interesting meal conversation.
I remember that those kits. My son had one of those kits where you could do the fingerprints with the with that graphite or whatever. It went all over the place. It was such a mess. But is that some of what they're doing here?
I don't want to give anything away. You know, Carrie Doyle has done an amazing job putting this festival together, and the village is really lucky to have her.
Yes.
She's also a member of the Authors Night Selection Committee for the library, and you know, everybody works really well together, but she's done a great job.
Well, I was thinking, you know, like Authors Night, which the past couple of years we've had the pleasure to broadcast from,
fabulous.
And we look forward to doing it again this year if everything falls into place, which I think it should. This, as soon as you're done, you start thinking about next year's Who's Done It, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And we, you know, we're watching the way things work, and we're using more of the building this time. Mm-hmm. You can see we're doing book signings and a little tea inside the lobby, having your live radio broadcast in this room. You know, each year I think it'll continue to expand and develop further and further.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is, but it's important.
It absolutely is.
The best thing is people are enjoying it and
no
benefiting
question.
From it.
So like the East Hampton Library Authors Night, which is a fundraiser for the library, does is there a benefit financially for the library from the festival?
No, we're doing this as a part of a partnership with the village.
That's great.
We're not any of the, we're not a donor for this event. This is for the Village Foundation.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's important also.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. How does this festival intersect with Authors Night that's coming up in August?
Well, I mean, it's reminding the world that East Hampton Village is a place that really cares about authors and books. And now we have these two huge events that are bringing people to East Hampton and getting a lot of attention. And I think, you know, that alone goes a long way. We share authors. We mm-hmm. share contacts. It's really a great partnership.
Yeah. And you have East Hampton Library's Authors Night is celebrating its 20th anniversary this summer August.
It is August 10th.
Yeah. Are you getting ready for it? Any spoiler alerts that you can give us?
Let's see. What can I give you? We're building a whole new website, so don't get excited if you look at the website and it looks old. The new one's going to look beautiful. And we just in the last week signed Diane Nyad.
Oh, wow.
The publisher has re-released her book that the movie was based on, and we're really excited to have her.
That's exciting.
I think that she will be popular. It also is the 50th anniversary of The Power Broker.
Oh.
So my goodness.
So we are hoping that we can do something really special for Bob Caro at the event, something that we're going to get everybody involved in, including the radio audience during the live performance.
We have
an interesting idea.
So. Oh, great. We'll be happy to hear about it. And we interviewed
Michael Mackey.
Michael Mackey interviewed him last year at Authors Night. So we have that on our website. And we were so excited. He's such an icon.
He is.
An amazing
And a humble, what a humble guy.
Yeah. And he is the number one person that the authors ask to come and talk to. And
journalists, and too.
he's amazing.
Just to see him last year under the tent, I didn't even talk to him. I was like, holy smoke, that's Robert Carroll.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big deal. It's a big deal.
Well, we'll look forward to that. And I'm intrigued by your tease about radio involvement with Bob Caro. So, thank you so much for joining us and for supporting the Hamptons Whodunit and having it here at the library. It's
thank you, Dennis.
Bustling,
thank you for
really,
being
really
here.
Great.
I admire what you do.
Yeah.
I really do. I mean
thank
that.
You.
Yeah.
Absolutely. East Hampton Library Executive Director, Dennis Fabisak. Thank you.
Thank
so
you so much.
Much. And joining us now is co-founder of Hamptons Whodunit, Carrie Doyle.
Hey.
Also on the village board and an author herself.
Yes,
wearing
thank
many
you for
hats.
Having.
Oh, thank you for having us and thank you for helping us to be here and for everything that you've done to create the festival in its second year now.
Yes, here we are in our second year.
How's
All
it going?
Legends going. It's going really well. Last night we launched at our, we had the Maidstone Club kickoff cocktail party, which was about double the size as last year. And it was really great. The energy was amazing. I think last year there was a feeling like, okay, it's going okay. We're no major, you know. And now it was like, wow, that went really well. Like the guests were very excited and they were excited to get photographed and go to the Step and Repeats, and all our authors showed up and were mingling, and it was really, really great. And it was that misty backdrop, so it was a nice atmosphere for it.
Nobody got murdered, though.
Not that I know of, you know?
Not yet. Who
Sometimes
knows?
You don't find the bodies right away.
Yeah, let's hope not. Oh, my goodness. So how has the festival evolved since last year?
Well, last year we found that a lot of people liked the interactive experiences and the smaller engagements, so we've added several of those. We had added a lunch with true crime authors at Comiso, and we added a trivia night with fiction authors at Hedges Inn, and then a wine and crime night at Hedges Inn as well.
That's fun.
Yeah, so those go right away. And then we've added just some little bit programming in the morning, some coffee and crime. When people come to the Hedges Inn to get their badges, they can talk about the daily.
Coffee and
yes.
Crime.
Well, today it was actually perfect because they're doing daily topics, and so it's all about OJ this morning.
Oh my gosh. My goodness. I was in the courtroom when OJ was found.
No way, really?
It was wild.
Wow.
It was wild. Wow. I have a great photo of me with some of my colleagues holding up the newspaper that it was like a special edition.
That was timely.
So intense.
That's amazing. Yeah, we need to sidebar about that because I was obsessed with that case.
Oh, unbelievable. Brought me right back there. What went on in that courtroom was just incredible.
This is such an, I got to admire you guys because it must be a ton of work. Obviously, you love it. You know, which is, I can identify with that because I love what I do, but I can see that you just love what you do. I just want to, the website is so great. Just go to hamptonswhodunit.org and you'll get all the information that you need.
Right? Yes, definitely. Yeah. You can still get information about tickets that are available and the authors and our schedules on there as well.
Absolutely. And you've got so many events.
Yes, we have a lot of events. We have a lot of panels. Today we have panels all day. And then Saturday and Sunday we have panels. Tomorrow is a combination of true crime and fiction. And then Sunday is exclusively true crime. And then we have book signings at Bookhampton Sunday. And then tomorrow book signings. All our book signings are free at the Moran House or Bookhampton. So people, even if they don't have passes, they can come at the library, Bookhampton, and you can see the schedule and come and buy the book here or bring your own copy and have the author sign it. So,
well,
and then tonight we have graveyard tours at 5. Both nights, our local historian, Hugh King.
Oh, yes. He's so
amazing.
Yes. Talk about someone who loves what he does.
He's amazing. And he's actually, if you look at our logo of the Hamptons Whodunit, there's Hugh King on there, the town crier. He's holding the lantern
right
in our little logo there.
So,
what a great guy he is.
Yeah, he's fantastic. Everybody loves him. I mean, that was, we had so, like, getting emails every second. We just had asked people to sign up in advance. So we had a gauge of numbers. And people are saying, you know, it's a free event, but like, can I come?
I
they
bet.
Really want in on that one.
Boy,
because we did have witches 30 years before. For Salem, and a lot of people don't know that.
So that's one of the things that I find so fascinating. East Hampton definitely has a history that syncs up with this festival.
Yes. Besides being this bucolic historic village, we have witches, we have our own things about murder. The mayor's going to be doing tomorrow a talk on murder in the Hamptons. He was the former police chief, so he's going to talk about the crimes. And yeah, there's definitely, you know, everywhere there's sort of a sinister angle to things. But yeah, so it's a perfect backdrop in our beautiful village that's been here. So it's nice.
And what about your book? Tell us about it.
Well, I've published 14 books. I've written more. I've published 14. So the last, I guess, 7 are mysteries, 4 of which are the Hamptons Murder Mystery Series, which is about a fictional innkeeper in East Hampton.
Congratulations.
And thank you. And so, yeah, so I always feel like I'm in my mind here because I'm writing about it. So, yeah, those
what
are...
What you love.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Carrie Doyle, East Hampton Village board member and co-founder of Hamptons Whodunit Festival and author. Thank you so much for putting this together. It's amazing. And thank you for having us here as well.
Thank you both.
Nice to meet you. Yeah. And I had the pleasure to talk to Barbara Butcher, her first book. And so we're going to run that interview now. This is Barbara Butcher. And it's my pleasure to be joined by Barbara Butcher. Her book is entitled What the Dead Know, Learning About Life as a New York City Death Investigator. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
This is kind of fun, huh? This whodunit festival?
It is. This is wonderful. Getting to meet the people who read the books is terrific because, you know, we work in the dark. I work alone in a little guest bedroom in front of my computer all day long. And sometimes I think about the people who read my work. Well, now I get to see them.
Right.
And it's lovely to have that connection.
That must be great for you as well. And I just want to remind folks, you can go to hamptonswhodunit.org and you'll get the entire schedule. So you got a job as a medical examiner in New York City. You were only the second woman ever to be hired for the role of death investigator in Manhattan.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So what was your background prior to this to make you eligible for this position?
Well, I'll tell you first, I was a medical legal death investigator working for the medical examiner's office.
Okay, gotcha.
So I was not a forensic pathologist. I was a scene investigator.
Okay.
So how I got into it, you know, as a kid, I was enormously curious and a little weird. And my parents got me a dissecting kit and a microscope for my birthday. And kids used to bring me the roadkill from the neighborhood. And I would dissect it to figure out, you know, what happened? Why did this little creature die? And, you know, how do things work inside
there? Oh, my goodness.
There?
How old are we talking here?
Oh, we're talking 10 to 12 years old.
So you never had a problem with blood?
Never.
You were intrigued by it.
Yeah, I was curious as all hell. So I became in time a physician assistant working in surgery. So again, more blood didn't bother me.
Gotcha.
And then I became like a hospital administrator and all these kind of jobs that were very, very boring for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then my life kind of changed. A lot of different things happened. I got sober, for one thing.
That's a good thing.
That was a very good thing.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
And one of the benefits of that was I got to go to this program called EPRA, Employment Program for Recovering Alcoholics.
Nice.
And what they did, they gave me all those tests, Minnesota multiphasic preferential blah, blah tests, like a career counseling service.
Mm.
And it came out that I should either be a poultry veterinarian or a coroner. I said, poultry? Why poultry? And the guy said, well, look, you'd be a good veterinarian. You're very good at diagnostics.
Right.
And but if you were with puppies and kittens and you couldn't cure them, your heart would be broken. But chickens? Nobody cares about chickens. They have beady little eyes and, you know, you can't really get attached to them. I said, I'll take coroner.
Okay.
So
that's how you got the position.
Yeah. Well, he said, call the person in New York who you think has the best job in the world. So I called Charles Hirsch, the chief medical examiner of New York.
And did you know him?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I made a cold call. I said, can I have an informational interview? Of course, come on in.
Wow.
Yeah, you're a terrific guy. And we spoke and he introduced me to people. I didn't know it at the time, but they had a job opening for an investigator. And you needed a medical background as a physician assistant or a physician.
Mm-hmm.
They offered me a job right then and there.
It makes me think of that. Some people describe luck as what? Preparation and opportunity meeting?
Yes,
it sounded
exactly.
Like exactly what happened to you.
Like a God shot, I call it.
And
it
was sure.
Like, you know, it just happened so wonderfully. And this was the dream job for me.
That's great.
You know, I'm nosy, I'm curious, and I don't mind dead things.
How long were you on the job? Is that
23 years.
Wow, that's quite a run.
It is.
I just want to remind folks, we're talking to Barbara Butcher. The book is What the Dead Know, Learning About Life as a New York City Death Investigator. It's her first book, but it sounds fascinating, obviously, just from the title. And Barbara, you're explaining it like you love what you do.
I do.
Did. And now you love to write about it.
Yeah, I do. You know, the corona shutdown gave me the opportunity to just sit in my room and write for 2 years. You know, my consulting, I had retired from the medical examiner's office.
Gotcha.
I had a consulting business, but that all shut down. So I took that time and wrote the book. And, at first it was a little upsetting.
I bet to relive the things.
Yeah, reliving them. But then in a way, it really helped to get it all out. And, I had a purpose in writing that book.
You absolutely did. Now, is this 5,500 death scenes
mm-hmm.
and 680 were homicides?
Yep.
and you were on the scene for these things and you investigated these situations. That's pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah. In the best possible city in the world to do it.
And why do you say that?
Well, New York City has the greatest variety of life and also the greatest variety of death.
Wow.
I think it was Dennis Leary who said something like, New York is such a wonderful city. There are so many interesting ways to die.
And it sounds like Dennis Leary.
Yeah, and yeah. It's true. I got to see everything from Fifth Avenue penthouses filled with original artwork, Cezanne's, Monet's.
Right.
And then a few hours later, I'd be crawling under an abandoned building to pull out some poor heroin addict who had overdosed in a pile of garbage.
Oh, my goodness.
So I went.
This is powerful stuff, Barbara.
I went high to low every single day.
Holy cow.
It was crazy.
Holy smokes. Now, you kind of alluded to the fact that you were consulting. Do other authors approach you when they're writing, or does the media ask you for consultation on your career?
Yes, they did. For a long time, I would help other authors or television writers. But most of my consulting work was for families who were not satisfied with the investigation they got or had a cold case, no solution, or they disagreed with the medical examiner's determination. Like the ME might say it was a suicide, and that's so hard for families to accept.
Right.
They would rather know that it was a homicide than a suicide.
Right. So would this be from folks around the country, around the world, would reach out to you about the death of someone that they wanted further investigation into because they didn't feel that the local police or jurisdiction did a good enough job?
Yeah, most of it was East Coast.
East Coast,
I don't
okay.
think I went further than Ohio, further west. But yeah, most of my work was in the New York area or East
This
Coast.
Is very powerful stuff, Barbara.
Thank you.
And I appreciate what you do. I mean, I really admire it. And finally, I mean, do you have any, were you a fan of the genre of true crime or this type of writing? Or you just because you've had such an interesting career, you said, I'm going to write about it.
No, I've never been a true crime. I never was a true crime fan.
Gotcha.
Because what I was seeing was so much more realistic than what you could show on television.
It's too real for me almost when I'm sitting here talking to you. I mean, yeah. I couldn't do what you do, but that's why I say I admire. Yeah.
But then when I did the Dick Wolf show on Netflix, the Homicide New York, I think he did it in a way that showed, without being gory or sensationalist, the true feeling of a death scene, the darkness involved in it, and the emotions that come up.
Right.
For the police, the investigators, for everyone. I think you did a terrific job on that show.
Well, I think there's just a very tiny group of people who would be qualified to be able to handle the job that you did for 23 years, and I think they got one of the good ones, Barbara.
Why, thank you. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Again, it's Barbara Butcher, and that's her real name. That's pretty funny. Barbara Butcher, the book is What the Dead Know, Learning About Life as a New York City Death Investigator. It's a pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
I'm Brian Cosgrove, along with WLIW-FM's general manager, Diane Michelli. We're wrapping up our live broadcast from East Hampton Library, part of the second annual Hampton's Whodunit Festival, and what a great time it was, Diane.
It has been a whirlwind hour. It's been really fascinating.
It's been so much fun.
Absolutely. Talk to some great authors, true crime experts. It's just fascinating.
It is fascinating. You can go to hamptonswhodunit.org, hamptonswhodunit.org. This thing is just getting started, literally. It just kicked off last night with the cocktail party. It's going through the weekend, through Sunday, throughout East Hampton Village. Please take advantage of this wonderful opportunity. HamptonsWhoDoneIt.org. Thanks to Delaney, Kyle, Brianna, Brian Bannon for all your help.
Thank you to our listeners for listening. And thank you, Brian, for being co-host together.
You as well, Diane.